This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring retired FBI special agent Jennifer Coffendaffer.
What constitutes important evidence? Evidence related to a case. Well, that would normally be evidence that has something to do with a case, something that maybe you're talking with witnesses, maybe you're talking with potential suspects who have information to give you about a specific case, and you're talking to them right after the crime was committed. They may have very valuable things. May not all be in context at that moment in time, but that's why you need to hold on to those pieces, because you don't know the value that it may have and hold down the road. Well, not in Delphi, Indiana. That's not how that works. See, there, when you have those pieces of evidence, they just say it's not evidence at all. It's not related to the case, even when it is. It's a different world over there. Jennifer Coffendaffer, retired FBI special agent, joining me. Of course, I'm talking about Nicholas McClelland and his response to the deleted videos and interviews that had taken place with some allegedly Odinists right after the two little girls were killed there in Delphi. But all that evidence is no longer there. These are smart people. I mean, at least I think they have some semblance of intelligence, considering where they're at in life. How are they thinking that everyone's just going to believe everything they say like this? Like, it's not evidence at all related to the case, the videos and the interviews that were conducted right after those two little girls were murdered.
You know, this is one of these cases that I think we're just on the tip of the iceberg as far as how much was done that was wrong, that was incompetent, that is just a hot mess that is going to be uncovered in terms of this police investigation. For obvious reasons, a teeny tiny department trying to handle the murder of two kids that were actually found by citizenry. So again, I have no idea if that crime scene was ever really kept properly. And then you have people who come on the scene that had zero experience, and you don't call in the FBI for a month, and then they go in. But of course, at that point, so much is gone, and so much had been done that wasn't done well. And this is one of those examples. You have a situation where you tape over witness statements regarding a double homicide. There is no way to slice this other than incompetent or on purpose.
Yeah.
It's one of those two.
And that's what gets me. Like, it's okay if it was an accident, sure. But why try and paint this as if this wasn't important, this wasn't valuable information by any stretch of the imagination? It just screams even more incompetence with the response. I would think there'd be something more to the effect of, we're sorry, this was a misstep, it should have been kept, it was not, unfortunately. But they're like, nah, no big deal.
Exactly. You know, it's better to just admit it.
Yeah.
To just say, this should have never happened. You know, I've explained the process before. These tapes, once you're done recording, they need to go specifically into an evidence vault that's called Elsher in the FBI. It's your electronic surveillance. It's put in an envelope. Copies are made that can be disseminated to the attorneys and for discovery. But that golden piece of evidence, which is the recording you just made of an interview, that is never to be touched again. That is original evidence, except if it's asked for in the trial. Mm-hmm. It's kept away like the rest of the evidence should be. But yeah, you have the fact that it's been recorded over two different, and to just soft sell that as, well, it really didn't matter, we have our notes. Well, you can write anything on your notes. And I can tell you from being in this situation, when I know something's recorded, I take a way different notes than if something isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Something isn't, I'm very thorough. It's line by line, you know, dates, times, everything's going to be written down. But when you record something, you might just write down, you know, just a couple of highlights or even something that you want to ask them. You know, your notes are completely different. And so for them to say that, you know, this is a perfect recitation of what happened in those interviews and it wasn't important anyway, we'll never know.
It makes no sense. I mean, where this should have gone to an evidence locker and been put away and been sitting there for safekeeping for when it's needed, it seems more like they, you know, just kind of threw it out into the break room and maybe somebody recorded a rerun of Matlock. And like, oops, that's a shame. Darn, we did that. I mean, that's about the, I mean, and is, I mean, as silly as that is this the level of incompetence that we're talking about here with the Delphi police force? I know it's a small department. I know things are going to be done a bit differently when you're smaller. You don't have to deal with this sort of stuff all the time. It's pretty rare that you have to deal with this sort of stuff, but when it happens, it happens. I mean, I still go back to, is this just a bunch of covering up for being dumb, for basically being Mayberry and not handling things in a proper way because they didn't know how to do better or they just had stupid people on staff? I don't know.
I think it truly is. People, the problem is incompetence mirrors cover-up.
Yep.
That's the problem, you know. Incompetence mirrors doing something wrong purposefully, mm-hmm. Public corruption, in other words. I don't think this started out as anything that was corrupt. But the problem is because they are trying to cover up now their missteps instead of, they should just come forward and say, listen, we didn't protect the crime scene. We went back to the crime scene and found other evidence. We had this tape over issue. We had issues with, you know, not taking all the samplings that we probably should have. We had something fly out of the trunk of one of the officers. We lost a fingerprint, possibly. All of that should just come out now. Mm-hmm. And they should apologize and move on. Because if they do have these statements that were made by him, these confessions, the five confessions, that could be a really good case.
Yeah. The defense team for Richard Allen, I know that they are planning to question investigators here. What do you think they're going to be asking and what do you think we're going to learn out of that?
Well, are they going to be able to speak with them?
That's the good question, yes.
I think it's just a motion. And remember, right now, there's a motion to get them off the case. So I wouldn't doubt that they're removed again from the case. I think it's if it's up to Judge Gull, she's going to take them off again. She's going to have a hearing. And sadly, I think that there isn't going to be a Franks hearing. And this Delphi case, I think, will go down as not only one of the worst investigated cases from its inception years and years ago, to this whole adjudication process, to the issues that have happened in terms of the attorneys and them being, you know, fired, if you will, or forced to resign. This whole thing is one of the worst examples of a case from beginning to right now in the middle I've ever seen.
Let's do a little predicting the future. Let's say 10 years from now, Richard Allen incarcerated in jail for the rest of his life. Is he dead or is he a millionaire because he got to sue Delphi for all of this?
Oh, such a good question. It's really, to me, I just want to hear those recordings. If they have powerful recordings where he sounds in his right mind, mm-hmm. and also I'm still convinced he did something to get back on the radar. Mm-hmm. I'm convinced he might have made some sort of admission or he's done or said something that all these years later put their needle back on him. I'm interested in seeing all of that. But I think one of the biggest things, I tell you, if I were the defense team, I would be putting that FBI agent on the stand that did the probable cause affidavit, where they say there's probable cause to believe that Ron Logan did it. Mm-hmm. I would be putting on all that evidence. Of course, the Ron Logan's girlfriend has come out and said that Ron Logan is bridge guy. I've always known it was him. He abused me. He was sexually, mm-hmm. Abusive toward me.
Yeah.
They're going to put her on the stand.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever defense team. And that's where we're going to see some doubt unless these confessions are rock solid, because other than the confession,
yeah.
the only thing they have is that bullet. And that bullet was cycled through the gun manually. And so the marks, the tool marks from the extractor and from the ejector are going to be lighter in nature and less definitive that they're a match.
Mm-hmm. Now you're saying, how did the needle go back on him? I don't know that it was the needle. I think it might've been more of a dart, more like Tony Liggett sitting in his office with a bunch of pictures on a wall going, an election is coming up. I gotta get somebody. So I get boom. And unfortunately that needle landed on Richard Allen. I think that might be how it went down. I don't know, just my conjecture on it, but would not be surprised.
Yeah, not a dart, but a flaming arrow. I mean,
yeah.
It came in hot, and we're going to see if they have what it takes. But the bottom line is, whether he is guilty or innocent, he deserves to be treated fairly. The process should be fair, and Brady material, Giglio material, that exists in this matter needs to be exposed, just like those recordings.
Sick of the ads?
We are too.
Start listening with no commercials now and get access to all of our episodes in advance of everyone else.
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
True Crime Today Premium Plus.
Sign up now